Good morning, friends. Let's pray together, Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, and beloved God, saints of all religions, beloved Master,
blessed Mother,
dear David,
lovingly we
invoke
your presence.
O beloved Lord, I offer the flowers of my devotion. On the altar of my love for thee,
my listening mind waits in silence,
while my soul softly opens in prayer,
to receive thy love.
Gradually I am enfolded
in
thy arms of everlasting bliss.
Suddenly I
realize
I am not this body.
I am not this mind.
I am not this soul.
Thou hast absorbed these
in thy eternal flame.
I am forever
one with thee.
Begin with this quiet talk with the Master, and then after I finish that, Peony, maybe you can just start to lead us in a chant. This is called The Calm Mind. My child, we were talking together of problems which come into a life and which must need be untangled, thought out, and worked through. As these problems and questions arise in your outer experience, never forget for a moment that within is the mind of Christ. Do not waste time in idle speculation or thinking, but come within for quiet contemplation with the Master of your soul. Thus can you make him not only your soul's master, but master of all outward conditions. As you lay the problem before the Christ mind within, as you talk it over in every phase of its perplexities, as you say, Lord, I don't know how to decide this thing. I cannot see the future or know what will be best in the coming days. There will come a quiet peace, which will leave the outer mind hushed and still, so calm, it will reflect the inner mind, as a lovely lake reflects the reality of the trees on its banks. Then the thoughts and ideas which come to you concerning that which is confounding will be clear, all-compelling, definite, that you will know the way to take. All outer circumstances shall so evolve themselves and work together that there will be found only one course which you would consider taking, and with the peace and feeling of sureness within your whole being, you will know, this is my choice for you. From this point of higher knowledge and consciousness, you have used your freedom of choice and chosen my way to solve your problem. to begin by reading a posting that I wrote last night. It's called Be Happy All the Time. This is a quote from Master. Mental restlessness results from an outward focus of awareness. Restlessness itself guarantees that happiness will remain elusive. The more widely we scatter our energies, the less power we have left to direct toward any specific undertaking. Octopus habits of worry and nervousness rise from ocean depths in the subconscious, fling tentacles around our minds, and crush to death all that we once knew of inner peace. One of the most challenging battles we come up against in our daily sadhana is the choice to turn within when things on the outside have successfully stolen our full attention. In other words, we have become enmeshed in the dream again and forgotten that our true purpose is to wake up and realize the true self. Whether the dream be great victories in our mind, colossal upsets and failures, or even a creeping sadness and anguishing monotony of life lived in this world, they all have a way of taking our mental citizens into delusive states of jubilation and defeat. In all cases, the impact is very much the same, that of taking ourselves away from our center of happiness in the true self. Recognizing this and internalizing this realization as our very own requires steadfast practice and application in our daily life. This is the reason that Papa Ramdas at one point in his sadhana said he simply wouldn't go to sleep, for the very real concern that if he stopped chanting God's name, he would forget the Holy Presence and become enmeshed in his little self again. A sincere question surfaces for all of us, again and again, amidst outward identification with life in this world. Am I able to choose to turn within and put my trust and faith into God when things haven't gone the way I wished they would? When I am sad? Or when things have gone perfectly and emotional elation takes me over, can I still yet choose to turn within? Even as I may sincerely wish I had done better in a situation, said something different, or proven more up to the task that I was given, can I nonetheless turn it all over to God and find solace and comfort in His presence here and now? In this choice, to return within to His presence, lies the foundation for the solution to every problem we encounter. It sounds so easy as words typed on a page, or as a kind of intellectual understanding, and yet all sincere seekers can attest to how extraordinarily challenging this can be at times, as we aspire to rise fully into God consciousness. To be able to let go at this moment and let God take the reins, even as something that has happened upsets us greatly, or someone has done something which hurts us deeply, can I yet and still turn it over to God and choose to focus on His friendship, on His story, and not my own? At some point, we begin to recognize that we can spend hours, days, even lifetimes ruminating on the same problems without ever getting to the source of them. That is because often we haven't recognized that the source of the problems themselves were never on the outside of our life, but always within us, in our emotional state, in our attitude towards life, and ultimately in the hard-earned ability to choose to be happy. The persons and circumstances which have acted as the conduit for upsets are the channels in Ram to bring out this inner condition, that we may be cleaned up and made whole. One of the greatest pitfalls on the path is when we don't believe ourselves to be worthy of His grace, or capable of feeling the divine presence. And so, we instead take on the weight of this world as if it is our own. We take on all the sadness of this life as if this is ourself. The solution, of course, is to accept that even now, the greatest choice I can make is to renew my dedication to God here and now, to speak to Him, to tell Him, I love you, to ask for His help in any and every way, and to start each day anew in service to Him and everything and everyone He has placed in my life. We do this not by continuously tilling up the problems of life, but by focusing on God and learning to live this life with a kind of quiet trust and humble submission to His will. All of that which sounds awful to an activated ego brings none other than peace and bliss to the simple yogi. Calm, happiness. This also doesn't mean neglecting our duties or ignoring our faults if they be revealed to us. It means rather doing our best to tune to His will in all ways and not our own. When we are able to do this amidst the gravest hurts and disappointments and the highest peaks of accomplishment and praise, then we know we are on the home stretch, the final mile. Let us reflect then that no matter what has gone on in this life, I shall keep my remembrance of your presence always on my tongue, always pulsing in my heart, and ever glistening in my mind. For in this knowing alone lies my true happiness here and now. May your choice to be happy all the time be ever new, each and every day. And there's one more quote from Master at the end. Happiness comes not by helplessly wishing for it, but by dreaming, thinking, and living it in all circumstances. No matter what you are doing, keep the undercurrent of happiness, the secret river of joy, flowing beneath the sands of your thoughts and the rocky soils of hard trials. Paramahansa Yogananda. That I've in my own path always gravitated towards this idea of happiness and the need to try to understand what it is for myself. All of us in our own ways have experienced happiness and have our own kind of intuitive understanding of what happiness is. And yet what so often happens in our life is that we as we experience life and we experience happiness, we often attach the feeling that we obtain to the circumstances which have brought it about. And we start to identify happiness as something that is outside of us and not inside of us. It becomes very easy to think that as we create expectations for life and as those are met, that this is what makes us happy. And yet, it's very important as yogis that we learn to actually disassociate with this. That we actually learn to find a source of happiness that is on the inside of ourself. As I said in the posting, it's easier said than done. And every sincere seeker already understands this. That as challenges come up or excitements arise, and we begin to attach ourselves on the outside again, it's our happiness which is actually lost in this process. And whether in that moment we think of ourselves as being happy or sad, the truth is, as soon as our identification moves to the outside, we have set ourselves on a trajectory of losing ourself and our source of happiness. We go through this rhythm enough times, and we observe this in our own life, and we become keen to observing this in everyone's life, that in some way every single person is seeking happiness. And yet we become much more sensitive to that process for ourselves and for each person, and whether the activities and choices that are being made will really lead to happiness, or will they take this soul away from their own source of understanding. The important part is that in our own sadhana, we learn to become masters of our own happiness, which means that no matter what's going on, no matter what's being said about us or what's being brought to the table, that we have a place in ourselves where we can disassociate from these outer things, and we can simply turn within to find our happiness anew, again. It is true that in fact we learn how to actually do this by the greater the delusion of the happiness being on the outside. And so the greater the challenge to our happiness based on our own sadness or our disappointments, or the greater the excitement and something going on in our life, these are the actual prods which teach us to become a master of ourself. Without these kind of bigger tests and greater challenges, we don't ever learn to be a master of our happiness. If everything goes smoothly, we simply think we have it figured out. But the reality is there is increasing levels of depth that we have to seek and aspire to attain to in the God in ourself. And that means that with everything that comes up in our life, we simply learn over and over again to find our comfort, to find our satisfaction, to find our friendship within ourself. And not based on this circumstance on the outside. By doing this, it gives us a kind of peace, a stabilized perspective for how to live and operate with people in our lives and how to carry out God's will in our life. As soon as we've given up this power of knowing God's friendship on the inside, we give away our power to actually be of service to this world. This is something we always have to remember, that this power of our connection to God on the inside is what gives us the power to serve Him on the outside. An externalized mind never wants to believe that. It always wants to restlessly jump into the next thing and make its next proclamation. But we do this enough times, and we're open to the reality of every situation, which is when we operate from the inside out, we've got a fighting chance to be happy. And when we operate from the outside in, we set ourselves up on a one-way ticket to losing our source in God and to giving away our happiness all over again. Master's quote emphasizes this idea of restlessness, and it's something we all have to make sure that we pay attention to. As we get engaged with the world on the outside, it's very easy to let our own rajasic nature become the guide. And this is very problematic for the yogi's mind. And even worse is that once we set up into this pattern of becoming restless, we so often give way to the tamasic states. And this takes us down even further, whereby we don't have the happiness, the energy, and or enthusiasm to actually live this life in God. We've all certainly experienced this at times where maybe we just don't want to get out of bed. We don't want to face this day. And this is the tamasic state, and this is not our true self. And we need to really internalize this and understand that when these kinds of states of mind come into us, that these are actually here to wake us up, but they are not us. And so what is the solution, and how do we right this ship? Master gives us a wonderful clue when he emphasizes our need to rediscover calmness as the actual source of our happiness. And as we focus on our breath and we focus on becoming calm, that means not being swept up in the excitement, not being downcast into the darkness or the sadness, the disappointment, but just simply being calm and accepting that God's presence is here and now. It's like resetting the computer. When it's completely lost itself and the screen is flickering or it's frozen and it won't operate anymore. This is exactly what happens to us. And the solution so often is to do just a reset. Just turn that thing off and on again. And it's exactly what we have to become masters at in our own self. When we start moving too fast and we start to feel it, it's time to reset. And when we start to sink into those tamasic states and we lose our zest for life and for realizing God in our life and for serving Him in this life, for serving everyone and the God in everyone in this life, when we lose this, it's time to reset. And that means we come back to our calm and happy place. For each one of us, we have a responsibility to ourself and to each other to work on this. And that means we all become willing to practice stepping away and cultivating the calmness that enables us to step back in the right way. This is something that I really feel being at the ashram teaches each sincere person greater than anything else. Being at the ashram means there will be feedback. It means that things won't always go perfectly for our ego nature, which wants to be asserting itself and be in control of everything. But that's all good. We signed up for this. Freedom is our purpose. Happiness is our true state. And so as anything comes up that acts as a conduit for us to press pause, we learn how to separate ourselves from what's going on, from any upsets with any person, from anything that hasn't gone the way we wanted it to, from any judgment we're holding about ourselves, to separate ourselves and go back into the calmness and to learn to be happy. Now, this can sound so simple. And I'm here to tell you it is. It is that simple. But it requires every ounce of focus all of our mental citizens to be routed in the right direction again. And the truth is that the greater the challenge, the more we have to learn how to focus and relax back into God with everything we are, with everything that we that is in us. Because any thread that we're holding on to of our own inadequacy, of judgments of others, of our own unhappiness, any thread we hold on to, that is still the narrative which defines us. But as we're ready to be happy, I tell you this, in one moment, the power lives within each one of us to flip the whole script and to find that God wrote this script. And I can be happy right now in calm, and I can approach this situation that's upset me with fresh eyes, with total openness for God's will in the situation. And this becomes our sadhana, not just once or and thinking we figured it out, but all the time and in ever new ways, diving to ever deeper levels of our willingness to hand over the reins of this life to God. Often I've reflected in my own path how this has been my saving grace time and time again, is that at every stage at which I hit the wall of being unable to perform, being unable to deal with this life and all of the demands that are placed upon it, my solution is always the same, and it is to go be by myself and to rest in God again and to find His comfort and to find His love and to trust it fully. Because the only thing in us that doesn't want to trust that God is here guiding us and helping us now is this little self which identifies on the outside of life. But our soul nature already knows these truths, already understands this for itself. Can't help but reflect on a story that I've told so many times, but I feel it's so important because for me it was the critical moment where this theme that I'm speaking of today internalized in me, and it was like it got poured in concrete and it became my foundation. And it was very early on at the farm, and I had been racing around doing a million things trying to make this a reality, very inspired, very full of the fire of God to do this, and taking and following every step. And one of the primary needs that arose that had to be faced was all of the animals attacking the farm, the coyotes coming on the property, the deer mangling the fruit trees, became a huge point of stress for me, because here we were trying to create this. And here was God's creation coming in and trying to decimate it. This was not a very happy moment for me with God. And I had to talk about this with Him. And ultimately, the solution to me was made very clear, and it involved getting a dog. And so I embarked on looking for a dog, and eventually saw a picture at the Burlington Humane Society of Tulsi Dog. True story. And I drove up to the Burlington Humane Society by myself and I picked that dog up. And I'll never forget how clear it was that he was the dog that was supposed to come home with me, because as I walked down that kind of dog prison corridor where every dog is in his cell, Tulsi had a dog to his left, barking and snarling at me, and he had a dog to his right, barking and snarling at me. And as I walked up to him, he sat down across this little glass barrier that was in between us, and he just stared at me with human eyes. And I thought, that's my dog. And I said to the lady, I want to take that dog for a walk. And they had a hill behind the facilities, and I took Tulsi Dog for a walk on the leash. And as we got to the top of this hill, I had the strangest feeling come into me. I'm going to take this dog off the leash and see what happens. And I did. I never told them that. And in hindsight, it's a pretty dumb thing to do, especially with our experience of animals running away. But you know what happened? That dog stuck right to me. He was my dog. Not my ego's dog. He was the dog that was supposed to come protect this farm and be here. So I filled out all the paperwork, paid whatever the fees were, got that dog in the car, and drove him home. They didn't know how old he was. They guessed he was 3. I thought, I found the perfect dog. And got home, and I remember at that time I was camping out by Shreve Teshdone. I would just camp out all over the farm because I wanted to learn about the farm. I wanted to learn about this land, and I wanted God to show me what I was supposed to do here. And we had to get a dog kennel. That was one of the requirements of getting a dog from the Humane Society, so that the dog had a place to be outside where it wasn't going to be tied up all the time, and also where it wouldn't just run away. I'm sure they had a lot of dogs get adopted that just run away. Well, in the middle of that first night, here I am hearing something outside the tent, and I open the door. And you know what I see right there? I'm by Shreve Teshdone, and I look over before that chicken coop was there, right in that same area, though. And that Tulsi dog is staring at me. Somehow, he got out of the dog kennel. He jumped a 6-foot fence. I walked him back to that dog kennel and put him back in there. All night long, he jumped out of that dog kennel. I realized there was no containing him in a dog kennel, and I couldn't even do it if I wanted to. So, started that some days that we had to leave the farm, and I had to figure out, what do I do with this dog if he's just going to run away? He can't contain him in his kennel. And so I tried to put him in the laundry room one time. And when I came home, he had scratched underneath both doors. If you've ever looked at the floor under where the door is in our laundry room, he had ripped it all up. He pulled a ton of that linoleum floor out, and there was blood all over it because he had torn his own nails back trying to get out of that door. So I'm getting a little frustrated at this point. You can't contain this dog. This dog is not willing to be contained. Well, thus ensues about 2 months of Tulsi dog running away every other day. I was at my wit's end, and I was burnt to the end of the candle wick. I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do. I went from adopting this dog and truly knowing that this was the dog that was supposed to come home with us to do this job, to being completely destroyed by his inability to do the job and stay home. I've said this many times. I can remember I would just go to the tool shed on the side of the house to grab a tool to go use a long handle rake or a broom or anything, and he would take off running, and he would actually run away because he was scared of every long-handled tool. That dog has come a long way. Well, I'll never forget one weekend we were going to have visitors, and Tulsi dog ran away again. And I was so stressed out because here I was having to host people and show them the farm for the first time, and this dog is gone again, and I need to go look for the dog. And so here I go down the road, completely burnt to a crisp, meeting every neighbor on the way. I met Monty for the first time. I met Pep for the first time. And I met Monty because what was Tulsi dog doing? He was running around the back of his lot, chasing the cows. And Monty said, "Your dog just ran through the cow pasture in the back." I said, "I'll go look for him." And I go back there and he's not there. And I come back out to the road. Now him and Pep are standing on the road together. First time I've seen either one of them. And they're like, "He's running down the road." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll go look for him." And I step outside of Monty's fence there. And I turn down that road and I say, "Tulsi dog, come here." He looks at me and he runs as fast as he can in the other direction. I felt my heart and my soul leave my body. That's the truth. I was defeated completely. And I did not know what to do. I was gone. There was no more answers. Zach could come up with nothing else. I ask you to consider that feeling, because we think we understand. But until we arrive at a place of the own complete feebleness and inadequacy of our ego nature, I tell you this, you don't understand. And God will make you understand one day. But my soul left my body. I watched him run away. And I sat down next to those rocks on Haven Place, next to the loader driveway. There's two or three boulders. I sat down there, and all I could do was pray my heart out. And I prayed and I prayed. I practiced a round of Kriyas, and I said, Master, I got this dog because of you. This was what you showed me was needed. I got this dog because you showed me this was the dog. I don't have anywhere left to turn. I don't have anything left. There's nothing left in my tank. I'm on empty. You have to help me. And as I did my Kriyas, and as I settled down, I became calm. I never opened my eyes. I never tried to fix it anymore. The only thing I could do was know that I couldn't do it. And I practiced my Kriyas, and I became calm again. And I tell you this, one of the greatest miracles of my entire life is I opened my eyes and that dog was laying right next to me again. I started crying. I said, let's go home. And I immediately understood that in that moment and in my total surrender, that dog would never leave again. He may run away for a day. He may get into Chris's trash, but he would never leave again. And I knew it was true. Everything was released in a moment. And do you know why? Not because of me, but because I gave myself completely to God. And so in all of these things that come up in our life, this is what I'm asking you to tune into and to pray about. How is everything that happens in your life the conduit for you to give yourself completely to God? All of your trust, all of your surrender, and allow him to work in your life now. It doesn't have to be you. It doesn't have to be that you have to figure it out and carry the weight of the world anymore. And it doesn't have to be that you get swept up into how great you are and how wonderful everything is. In fact, all of these things just route us to the same thing when we are ready. And that is to learn how to turn within ourselves. To learn how to face God completely and say, here I am, God. There's nothing left. You've ground it all into dust. You've made it clear to me that nothing I do actually matters. Only what you do through me. And I am your willing instrument and I'll do anything. But you show me and I'll do it. Otherwise, I can do nothing else anymore. And that is the story of Tulsi Dog. And how he actually made this his home is God grinding me into dust so that Tulsi would stay, so that Tulsi would make this his home. There is an art and a science inside of this process that can only be discovered as we sincerely set our sails to experiencing this. With all humility, with all courage to step off the precipice of what it is to live this life as an ego. The secret ingredient that which is so subtle is it actually calls for us to relax. As we get swept up into all the things of this world and our own inadequacies at times, or our own greatness at other times, we forget to relax. And the key is that we learn more and more to become more proficient at sitting back in our meditation asana and just relaxing again into his presence. I've had an interesting image come into my mind a lot. It's not been an image, it's been an experience. In the last couple weeks. And it is that I realized I have never actually understood the nature of the medulla until in the last years, I've had a totally different relationship to the what we call the ego center of our body and our brain and the medulla. But it's what Master also called the mouth of God. And through relaxation, it becomes revealed to us in such a more dynamic and living way than just relating to it as the seat of our ego. The true nature is it is the seat of our ego, and that we can feel this when we start to carry tension in the back of our head. And it's something we all need to tune into, explore in ourselves, is when that tension starts to build up there. And our job is actually to learn how to relax that tension. For many years, the only teaching that I had been given was that it's the seat of ego, and so it's generally a place to avoid, that we don't want to put any energy or focus there. But I tell you this, that's only half the equation. And the other aspect which we need to understand is that how we work with our ego nature and how we work with that center in our body is not to just ignore it. It is to actually help it to relax. And so a few times now this year in meditations I have mentioned, if you tense the front of your throat and you bring a conscious fortitude there, what it can enable us to do is start learning how to consciously relax the back of the neck where that tension builds up and allow the medulla to open up in a way that the prana can flow through it completely. If we only relate to the medulla as a place that our ego lives and to be avoided, we will miss this part of the process, and in truth we won't go very far beyond it. But as we start to relate to this actually as the mouth of God, and we start to be able to find our happiness through the opening of this mouth of God, so that the energy can flow into us and we can feel it, we feel the prana come into us. And our task becomes, what do we do with that prana when it comes into us? So we learn to relax this ego nature, and we learn to surrender that prana flow forward into the forehead. In many ways, the path becomes that 4 to 6 inches, whereby we learn how to relax this ego nature, and we learn how to center the prana flow of intelligence in the Christ center. This is something we all have to become proficient at, and we will, you know, whether it's by grace in the end and it takes us another 100 lifetimes to get there, or whether we're ready to go through this process right now because we're doing real sadhana now, we will start to understand this as the entire internalization of our path. We will start to feel this movement inside of us. And all of these ideas which I've shared about needing to learn how to turn within amidst all of life circumstances, this happens in this movement of energy from this mouth of God up to the Christ center. For each of us, it's something we could explore in every single meditation. It's something we can explore throughout the day, that if something triggers us or if something excites us, can we notice that some tension has started to build up in that ego nature, in that open channel in the back, and it actually closes the prana off. It cuts it off and it sends it down into the senses instead of going up and focusing in the Christ. In all of this, we find that our opportunity is to learn to take ownership of our consciousness, of our own happiness, all the time, and in every circumstance and in every way. It's teaching us to become a true self-master. And so I offer these thoughts humbly, and I submit them to you to make them your own experience, and to learn what is it to relax that ego nature. And it is to focus on God. And we find that as we relax that ego nature, that God intelligence, that God energy will move through us, and it will be heightened. It will be greater. And His happiness will move into us, and it will be better. Better than we can imagine. But we have to go through this process, and we have to get that ego's idea that it's going to fix the problem, that it can be the solution. We have to get that out of the way. And we become the willing instruments in any and every way. Very pleased last night when I opened up this Discourses to find Yogacharya David's writing along this almost exact theme. And it's from May 18th, 2017, and it's called Keys in Your Hands. It continues to amaze me how we can be on the East Coast in sun-drenched 85-degree weather, and 5 hours later, we have crossed three time zones, flying nearly 600 miles per hour at 30,000 feet, returning the Boeing 737 to where it was created, and enter into the oceanic climate zone where it is 60 degrees and cloudy. Having been immersed in colonial history in Savannah, Virginia, and Washington, D.C., the thought came to me of what those early settlers would think of these transportation and technological wonders. Surely even the most outlandish creative mind of the era could not have dreamed such marvels. Thomas Jefferson was in awe of the first hot air balloon that lifted off from the ground while he was in France. We have been witness to truly amazing progress since. Yet, biologically, the person rocketing into the stratosphere is not so different from the one riding on a horse-drawn carriage from the past. They too had hopes and dreams for happiness. A smartphone does not make a person wise. Quite often, it seems it has the opposite effect. A sign we saw while on the road read something like, "Go to church if you love Jesus. Text while you are driving if you want to meet him now." While the necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing are important, they still, in and of themselves, do not have the power to make us happy. Many of the topics colonists thought about are still with us. Topics of health, wealth, reputation, and happiness in relationships are defining features for our sense of well-being. Underneath all of these complicating factors competing for our attention is our essential existential health, our spiritual happiness. Someone with a towering intellect, substantial wealth, fame, or position can become miserable, lonely, and depressed. None of the above are guarantors for satisfaction in life, whereas someone in the simplest of life situations may radiate joy and be a light unto this world. All through history, the source of real happiness has not changed. Real happiness consists of aligning thought and action with one's innermost being. Proper alignment equals joy. Misalignment produces suffering. We have been given the keys to the kingdom of heavenly happiness. We have also been given the choice as to whether to use those keys or to carry on with old patterns of misery-producing habits. There is no superior being judging us on our performance. It is simply that we are a product of the choices we make in life. There are always reasons for finding fault with the world or for putting ourselves under stress. Money worries, illness, feeling powerless, and not having the love and admiration of others can be voracious wolves howling in the night, stalking the halls of our dreams. The Leela between Lahiri Mahashai and Sri Yukteswar is so instructive. Recovering from a deathly illness, Sri Yukteswar relapsed when his guru commented that though he looked better today, who knows what tomorrow might bring. Then Sri Yukteswar rebounded when Lahiri Mahashai next suggested that he thought he should recover. Back and forth went his recovery and relapse, with each alternating comment by his guru over several days. Finally, Sri Yukteswarji understood that Lahiri wanted him to go beyond polarized thinking. Even suggestions from his beloved guru, and anchor himself directly and permanently to perfect health through God-tuned thought. You hold the keys in your own hands for finding the eternal lightness of being radiating in the deepest recess of yourself. However, only if you mindfully use those keys will you be able to find the source of eternal life. It will not come from the fabled Fountain of Youth, associated with Alexander the Great and Ponce de Leon. Living waters come not from a hidden source in the jungles, desert, or mountain, but in the spine and brain. Those living waters make you know that eternal life is the true nature of your soul, and it is discovered through intensified prayer and meditation. These vital energies may also lead to a long life and youthfulness of the body as well. But what of that if self-realization is not attained? Worldly cares can sap youthfulness right out of your being. God can just as easily pour himself in and fill you with light and joy overflowing. Yes, this world alternates between highs and lows. It ever has. And it ever will be so. However, in your oneness with the infinite, you are his evermore. Knowing this is the key to lasting happiness. It is good to be in the Pacific Northwest. It is heartwarming to see friends and to find joy in all the nooks and crannies of life here. Yesterday I had an MRI of the brain. Other days will bring other tests. Then service on Sunday, Loon Lake next week, and a new journal in the making. A busy schedule, all to be filled with the bliss of living waters. do you feel up for playing us a song? Taking this moment to just bask a little bit in the calm happiness of our soul nature. see this for all those in our lives. Each soul claiming itself as its own, in the calm happiness of knowing oneself. Let us hold this out there for everyone we're called to pray for this morning, and for one another always. Let's pray together, Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou art in all your children.
Thou art in all your children.
Manifest your loving presence.
Manifest your loving presence.
In all these bodies.
In all these bodies.
All these minds.
All these minds.
In all these souls.
In all these souls.